Give glory to God, our light and our life.
You're listening to the recordings of sessions from the Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music in July of 2024, hosted by Concordia University, Nebraska. If you'd like to learn more about past LCMS worship institutes or about those that might be coming soon, visit lcms.org/worship-institute.
Right. It's still a couple minutes before 10:45, but there seems to be a critical mass of people here, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. And we will start with our appointed psalm for this session, which is Psalm 63. Hopefully everyone picked up the handouts that were on the back page. I have set Psalm 63 to an Anglican chant, which is one of personally my favorite ways of chanting the psalm. Who here has sung an Anglican chant printed like this, with the tone above and then the psalm pointed below? A couple people, okay, it'll be new for some of the rest of us. We have some Anglican chant in our hymnal even, but it's usually printed where all the text is between the two musical lines. But this is what you'll more commonly find in Anglican chant psalters, where there's a chant tone for each psalm, and then the psalm is pointed like this. So basically, the vertical lines are the bar lines. Here I've notated it such that a word in bold, a syllable in bold, means that that's sung over two chords. If there's the little dot, that's indicating that you change chord between those on that dot. And we'll give it a try, and for those of you who are less familiar, hopefully you'll pick it up a little bit as we go along. Let's go ahead and sing Psalm 63 to Anglican chant.
Thank you.
Good. Excellent job. It's not too hard to follow along once you get used to the pacing. All right. So getting into our session proper, we are talking today about practical organ improvisation. So I want to start by talking about what I'm not going to talk about. So first off, if you came here hoping that I'd be able to give you advice on creating a four-movement French organ symphony on a theme submitted to you by the audience, I'm afraid you wanted the impractical organ improvisation session next door. As much as I value the work of those concert improvisers who are truly spectacular in the concert works that they can pull off, even if we could do that, we wouldn't want to do that in an ordinary Sunday morning service, because that's the sort of thing that draws too much attraction to the organ and away from the liturgy proper. So what I want to talk about is improvisation that will enhance the worship, that doesn't have to be anything too complicated, but just are ways in which we can, through our playing on the organ, give added mood, added atmosphere, and added education to the course of an average Sunday morning liturgy. What I'm also not going to be talking about either is hymn singing per se, accompanying hymn singing. Although some of the suggestions I give here will have some use in hymn singing, particularly in introduction, what I'd like to focus on are aspects of service playing which can be neglected, and sometimes we forget that it's even a possibility, the ability of the organ to give little musical interludes at various points during the service that accompany not live singing, but accompany the liturgical action itself. There's handouts on the back table if you want to grab them. So the liturgical action that organ improvisation can accompany includes things like certainly processionals and recessionals. It includes the offering. It includes communion, either the preparation of the altar or communion distribution. These are all places where we may have a hymn or an anthem that we can that we've programmed for that spot. But there are also places where, in particular liturgies, we might not want to program a hymn or anthem there, so we might want to leave space available for meditation just with solo instrumental playing. Or there's cases where you've programmed a hymn or anthem and you've gotten to the end of it, but they're still passing the offering plate. So what do you do then? And that's where liturgical improvisation can come in handy. Or things like the children's message. If you've got a children's message in your service, you can play a little bit of music to accompany the children coming forward or returning to their seat, or even transitioning or introducing different hymns or service music, such as modulating from the key of one hymn to another if you've got three hymns back-to-back in communion distribution. Rather than just stopping one and starting another in a different key, you can provide a little bit of a interlude to smoothly modulate from one to another. And certainly, in the case of special liturgies, such as stripping of the altar on Maundy Thursday or other feast days or festivals of the church year, there are moments where the organ can particularly provide an added enhancement, an added depiction of the mood that we want to create for the congregation at that particular point. And there's also the simple opportunity of playing preludes and postludes that aren't written down already in a book, but just that you can create from a given tune. Generally, for liturgical improvisation, there is a given source material. And you want to remember that with improvisation, the word kind of gives off the idea that you have to just sit down. You haven't thought about anything before. You're just sitting down, and you let your fingers fall on the keyboard, and then whatever comes out, comes out. And there can be an element of that, but improvisation is something that you can practice. It's something that you can prepare ahead of time. It's not something that you just have to spring full-fledged from your soul at the moment of sitting down at the bench. And definitely, when you're practicing services, just like you practice repertoire, just like you practice hymns, you can actually practice improvisation. Typically, what I do when I know that I want to provide an improvisation at one particular point in the service is I have a melody, a source tune determined, and some sort of structural skeleton for at least how I'll start the improvisation, and then registration decided in advance. Registration either that I'll have set up on a memory level or that I know I can have time to pull by hand. Now, one thing as you're working on improvisation is that it's important to know your music theory, especially harmony. You want to know how to make chord progressions that feel like they move smoothly from one to another, or even chord progressions that give off a particular flavor or color. But knowing functional harmony, knowing, okay, this is how I can get from the subdominant to the dominant to the tonic and create a cadence, especially for cadences. It's useful to know a know basic music theory. So that's something that you should review if you feel like you've been a little bit rusty since you've had a music theory class. And then the other thing that you want to know is your instrument itself. You want to know the resources that you have at your disposal, what kind of stops sound good with each other. You want to make sure that if you pull something, it's not going to be too loud or too soft for that particular moment in the service. So you should, and hopefully you've already been doing this for whatever instrument you're working with at your churches, to know a little bit of how to register, what kind of sounds you have available. And you definitely want to have a general knowledge of that when you're approaching improvisation. And one other thing for a lot of these improvisations, they're not necessarily going to be a fixed timing ahead of time, because if you're accompanying liturgical action, like processionals, recessionals, like the offering, like communion distribution, you want to make sure that you're able to either keep it going if the action is still going, or to close it off if the action has finished. And to that end, you want to make sure that at the bench, you can actually see wherever the liturgical action is taking place. If your console is faced such that you're away from the altar, away from the main part of the sanctuary, and you can't move it to turn it around, you'll want to grab a mirror or some kind of reflective device so that you can actually tell, okay, the action's still going on, they're still distributing communion. Okay, now they're wrapping up. I should go ahead and bring this to a close. I've seen at some churches, I know they have closed circuit TVs in cases where the setup is such that the organist doesn't have a good line of sight. You could pull up the live stream if your church service is live streamed. But you have to be careful because there's going to be a lag delay there. So if you take that option, just be aware that you'll be a couple seconds behind. Or in the, you know, if nothing else, get someone else to come up to you and tap you on the shoulder and say, "We're finished now." So one option or another. And then you'll want to know what the purpose of the improvisation is. Because there's many different purposes that you can use liturgical improvisation for. Are you introducing a new tune that the congregation will be expected to sing later in the service? If so, then you'll want to give that tune a clear depiction in your improvisation, not alter it too much from what the congregation is expected to sing, because you'll want to make sure that they already have the form of the tune that they'll want to know in their ear by the time they need to sing it. Are you providing a moment for quiet reflection, such as during communion or some other contemplative moment in the liturgy? Then you'll want to use softer stops, a more relaxed tempo. Make sure you don't have any too busy rhythmic action, but just keep a nice, calm atmosphere. If you're trying to encourage excitement, like It's Easter morning, and you're trying to ramp everyone up with a little fanfare before the processional hymn. Then you'll want to definitely use a fuller sound, use more active rhythm, use more pointed stops. That's where you pull out the big reeds, the trumpets and tubas and whatnot, and create that excitement that people are eager to sing with. So the kinds of source material that you can use for improvisation, I think the first thing that you want to look at is the rest of the service. What are the other melodies that are going to appear? Either melodies that'll appear after your improvisation, so you can introduce it for the congregation, or melodies that have appeared before, and you can give people a moment to reflect on the words that they just sang. So, for instance, one thing that I'll usually do at the church where I work, Holy Trinity in Edmond, Oklahoma, is after the processional hymn, we have the salutation and collect, and then the children are invited forward for the children's message. And at that point, I'll often play a little improvisation on the processional hymn that everyone just sang as the children are coming up. And those sorts of things help to connect the service and make it feel like it's not just thing, 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 but that there's been some thought put to how everything connects from beginning to end. If you can create a liturgy that feels continuous from the first moment to the last, then I think that just enhances the worship experience for the congregation. Now, the particular things that you can improvise on, the first and most important set of tunes you can draw from are simply the hymn tune. If you're not going to use a hymn tune that you're singing that day, you can also potentially use a hymn tune that corresponds with the moment in the church year or the theme of the sermon. So for people who know that particular hymn, then that gives them an added, oh, yeah, that can connect that with what I'm already hearing elsewhere in the service. For instance, if you're doing a Christmas liturgy and you're like, man, there's just so many good Christmas songs out there and I can't cram them all into this service, then, you know, you can get in some of the ones that you couldn't fit in as little organ improvisations here and there. And that still adds to the mood. It still enhances the particular moment in the church year that you're dealing with. You also don't have to use hymns. You can use other service music, Gloria, Sanctus, Nunc Dimittis, other canticles that the congregation would sing. This is particularly useful if you're trying to introduce some new service setting, some new canticle setting to the congregation, having that extra moment of teaching where you can give the melody in advance of the congregation having to sing it is really helpful, because I think we all know with congregations, they like to stick to what they're familiar with. And when you're introducing something new, you've got to attack it from many different angles to get them to feel like, oh, this is actually familiar now. So organ improvisation is another way of doing that. One other thing you can use is even basing it off of a choral anthem or other special music. So again, going back to the case where you programmed a choral anthem for the offering, but as it turns out, the offering plates moved especially slowly that Sunday. And you've got a couple more, you know, you've got another 30 seconds or a minute before they're ready to be passed back up. Then it's handy to be able to say, okay, I'll just vamp on the anthem that we just sang. Just take this key, take a little bit of the melody, and fill in this 30 minutes or, not 30 minutes, hopefully. 30 seconds. I should say that does remind me, though, speaking about timing, the first church that I played for was a small Chinese congregation that was meeting in the chapel of the church that I grew up in. And they were on a circuit pastor system. So they had visiting pastors week after week who would come in. And occasionally, the circuit pastor would not arrive on time, sometimes as late as 15 minutes after the scheduled start of service. And, you know, I had my, and I was still a teenager at this point. So I had my, 5-minute prelude all set out, and they got to the end of it. And someone's like, have to keep going. The pastor's not here yet. So, you know, hopefully you don't have to deal with the situation of vamping for 15 minutes before the service actually gets started. But in the case that an emergency happens, it's a useful skill to have. But other things is, I found particularly if you find yourself in a mixed worship setting where you have the organ leading some hymns and you have the band leading other songs for a particular service, improvising on one of the songs that the band has done for that service is a good way to try to help unify that service and not create the awkward feeling that those sorts of mixed worship settings can often have, where it's just like we've thrown in a couple stuff from the organ, we've thrown in a couple stuff from the band, and it can feel a little bit disjointed if it's not approached with care. I think organ actually playing with the band is a little bit of a difficult thing to manage, but having another moment in the service where you improvise on the melody that the band has just done can be something that's handy. So for instance, currently at our church, the late service is a mixed service with both organ and band. So for this past Sunday, here's a sample of the kind of improvisation that I did on what was done as the processional song, a contemporary chorus called "O Come to the Altar." Just something as simple as that. Because I found it quite successful when we had to move to combining, because we previously had separate traditional and contemporary services, and due to personnel shifts, we had to combine those services. And so when I would just improvise a little bit on these band songs, it helped make them, who had to move from their modern space into the sanctuary, the modern crowd feel a little bit more welcome, because like, oh, I recognize that tune. So again, if you can draw on familiar tunes for your congregation, that'll also be something that can be quite handy. Of course, you can come up with an original melody, or even just use a harmonic pattern or basic chords, which I found especially useful if you're in a situation where you're providing background for spoken word. If the organ is just providing a little bit of nuance while someone is reading scripture at some particular moment in a liturgy, because in that case, you want to make sure that the organ doesn't get so interesting that people stop listening to scripture and start listening to you. So you want to rely on as simple a musical background as you can. So I think just chords are often a good thing to use for there. So I've just come up with a bunch of different ideas that you can use for improvisation. I don't claim originality for any of these ideas, so just as I've stolen them from other people, feel free to steal them and use them in your own improvisation. But the first category is just categories of how to deal with the melody itself. And the first easiest thing to think about is just where do you put the melody in the texture? Because you can put it in the top voice. Something like that, or you can use it in the in a middle voice. Or even as the lowest voice, which especially works well if you solo out the melody on the pedal. So that's a really simple way to just take melody and chords and create variety just based on where you put the melody in the texture. You can even, you don't have to stick to one placement throughout the whole thing. You can mix it up in between phrases. And again, having that melody bounce around between different voices is a good way of creating additional variety, especially if you're doing the a kind of variation where you take the melody and continue to create different variations on it. This is a really easy way of creating that variation. Then there's other rhythmic things that you can do with the melody, of which the easiest is probably creating augmentation. So does anyone know what the term augmentation means in music? Yeah, extending. So instead of the rhythmic values being as they're printed, you're making them bigger. Particularly if you do this in the pedal, that can be quite handy. Creating longer lines, or even, you know, you can make them very long if you want to create a figure. And then you can do figuration above that. But that's a really handy way of clearly defining the hymn tune beneath. Of course, there's different melodic elaborations that you can do for the melody. You don't have to play it just as it appears in the hymnal. You can throw in passing tones. And you throw in neighbor tones. You can do appoggiaturas. And of course, you can do trills, turns, you know, all sorts of little flourishes that create an extra sparkle for the melody. And you can even just, you can go as extreme as you want to. If you look at particularly some chorale preludes by the late Baroque composers, such as J.S. Bach's student Krebs has this. But even you know, you see this in Bach or himself, a lot of cases there will be a chorale tune that will be heavily elaborated in the solo voice, such that the tune is still there, but you can barely hear it between everything around it. But still, that chorale tune gives sort of the framework for how you're playing the melody, so that you don't not just left to with no skeleton around the melody. And you can do all sorts of things, you know. You can throw in as many notes as you like in between the notes of the hymn tune, as long as you come back to the notes of the hymn tune at some point. Of course, do remember that the more ornamented you make the melody, the more difficult it will be for it to be audible to the congregation. So if you're doing an improvisation where you're playing a melody that the congregation will sing later on, you might want to keep the ornamentation a little bit more subdued rather than getting too crazy. Now, of course, there's different rhythmic techniques that you can use with the melody. You don't have to play it in just the rhythm that's given. So one easy thing to do is if you've got a hymn tune in triple meter, like this one is, 1, 2, 3, you can turn that into duple meter. 1, 2, 3. Or you can even take a hymn tune that's in duple meter and turn that into one that's in triple meter. And those are different ways in which you can create rhythmic variety. You can even use an irregular meter. This is particularly fun. It's something like 5/8. And that's an easy way to create just a little bit of extra rhythmic energy. If you're trying to create something that is going to pep people up, just throwing them that little bit of off balance with that irregular meter is a great way to do that. So just take, I mean, you can even just take, you know, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, so there's basically just take each note, and just say, okay, this is going to be 3, this is going to be 2, this is going to be 3, this is going to be 2, and you can create a irregular meter out of that kind of arrangement. And you don't even have to do a improvisation where you actually go through the tune straight from beginning to end. You can take one where you just develop motives from the tune and then go off of that. And this is also something that you can essentially extend forever, at least as long as you want. And so this is particularly handy, for instance, at the end of communion distribution, if we've reached the end of our distribution hymn and there's still some indeterminate length of time before it will be finished, then I'll often just take that, just like the opening measure of the hymn that we just sang, and just take that melodic fragment and then just move it at different pitch levels, put it in different voices, and that sort of thing. You can just do as you keep moving through different simple harmonies until it gets to the point where, okay, now I can cadence it. So that's a technique I would particularly recommend if you've got to just extend time somewhere. So the next section of ideas are harmonic ideas. So going on what we were just talking about, if you need to end quickly, you have to be able to find the quickest path to a cadence wherever you are. So that can be as simple as you've got a hymn and you'll just end it on a phrase in the middle. So. And that's something where even if you started in one key, like this one starts in C major, you don't have to cadence in C major to actually end the improvisation. What you want to do is, if you're ending on a harmony that isn't the tonic that you've been in, you want to give extra emphasis on that final cadence so that people really feel, okay, this is the final bit of it. So definitely stretch out the last chord. And then if you do this that's one of the most classic organ sounds that everyone associates with the organ. If you put something like that in it there, everyone will feel like, okay, yeah. Amen. And definitely take advantage of that. If you need to extend, if you've been in a tonic cadence, the two places that you can easily move to are the subdominant and then you can extend it as long as you need to until the point comes where you can close it off. Or if you do the deceptive cadence to the relative minor, and then you can keep playing around in the minor a little bit until everything is finished and you can close off the improvisation. So having those particular harmonic tricks, either, all right, close it off, let's move right to a cadence, no matter what key the cadence is, as long as it feels final, or, okay, I need a little bit more time, instead of just ending on this tonic cadence, let's make a move to the subdominant or relative minor key areas. Then you can keep going off of that. One really easy tool is, especially if you don't want to make your feet too active, just work off of a long pedal point and say, all right, that's going to be... I'll just hang out there. And you can if you stay within the same key, even if there's a bit of a crunch, you can always make that pedal point work. Definitely, that's a good way to just hang out in a particular harmonic area for a while and keep improvising off of just static harmonies or very simple harmonies that move around that one pedal point. One harmonic progression that's really useful is just using a descending bass, the sort of... and then move back up to the dominant. So that's a chromatic descending bass. That's a bass that you can build harmonies off of. Forever. Or you can take a descending just down the scale. And if the bass just descends like that, you can usually find some kind of harmony. Tonic, dominant, subdominant, tonic, two chord, tonic. Then you have a secondary dominant here. So you can always find harmonies to build off of a descending bass and really accompany so many kinds of melodies off of that. So that's always a fallback harmonic progression that you can do. One other thing, just like between different phrases of the hymn tune, you can take the tune and put it around through different voices, top, middle, bottom. You can also even just modulate through between phrases. So rather than just playing the whole hymn in the same key, you can take a hymn to find a different one here. Yeah. And just, so this starts in D major. And then, let's see, and then we've ended up in G major. So then you can play the next phrase in G major and go straight there. Then you're back in. Now you're in E major, and then from A major you can take it. So basically, just when you land on the end of the phrase, you can use that chord or that melody note as a pivot to go to another one. Like for instance. Let's say you, because this ends on B, so let's say you go to B major, and then you can even just do the next phrase in B major. So those sorts of pivoting between different keys is a way to keep moving between different key areas, and again, create some oral variety in your improvisation. That contrasts with, you can use some improvisations where you basically don't change the harmony at all, and some improvisations where you're constantly switching between different keys. As the mood takes you, it's always good to have a variety of techniques that you can rely on. One particularly useful harmony, I certainly have a lot of fondness for it. Are extended chords, sevenths, ninths, elevenths. These are part of what allows you to do a pedal tone while still creating harmonies above it. But in any case, where you can take just extended thirds, even up to the full thing, and that creates a very... And that creates a very smooth aesthetic there that is particularly good if you've got a meditative improvisation that you want to create. And just any sort of cluster chords that you can do. So any chords where you've got that sort of flashing of seconds. These chords really work well on the organ because of, in contrast to an instrument that immediately decays like the piano, you can keep holding out these harmonies forever. And there I just threw in a little bit of, just to jump ahead one thing, modal inflection there, where I lowered the seventh in the major scale. There's all sorts of modal inflections that you can use that create a really nice atmosphere, either lowering the seventh like this, or you can raise the fourth, create a different modal inflection. You do have to be careful when you're using modal inflection. If you're using, or for instance, if you're using a harmony, but there's an accidental in the melody, if you create a clash, chromatic clash between your accompaniment and the melody, so for instance, that's not always, I mean, sometimes you want to create that sort of clash right there. But generally, I would say you want to be careful to avoid that. Or for instance, here in the second line of Crown Him with Many Crowns, it moves, modulates, and so you've got a accidental, actually the raised fourth in the melody line. The G sharp here. You don't want to end up on a G major harmony in your left hand, because that's not going to sound the greatest. One thing that I should say while we're at that, if you're playing an improvisation and suddenly a note comes out that you didn't intend, just remember, salvation is always a half step away. And that's something that I picked up from Jerry Hancock. He was an amazing organ improviser, but that was always one of the things that he would say. If you've got a clash, always move. And then one other thing you can do, if you do have that clash that you didn't intend, do it again. And then again. And suddenly it's intentional. And then you're like, no wrong notes. So any wrong note that you play in an improvisation, you can turn into a right note. That's your privilege. One other harmonic thing that I find particularly useful is the kind of slowly shifting harmonies. Again, this is something that the organ is really good at. If you just kind of build up a harmony one voice at a time, and then move each voice separately. Uh, That creates a really nice atmosphere that's particularly good at communion or other very reflective moment. Of course, you can borrow chords from the opposite mode, so you can take... and here you alter the melody. And you can even put the whole melody in minor if you'd like. So doing those sorts of just smoothly swapping from major to minor is another way that if you want to create a little bit of additional color on a particular passage, those sorts of borrowed chords are often nice. And one thing that you can do, if you actually want to lean into dissonance, there's always just playing a melody and then having freely dissonant chords above it. And this can create a very French atmosphere. So that's something that, you know, you might want to just be a little bit aware of what your congregation can take, because some congregations are willing to be more adventurous in their listening than others. But there is a particular kind of character to that can be quite fun to throw at them from time to time. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about just some general structural ideas for how to handle in improvisation. One good tactic, because it's something that can be, you can just keep going while you do whatever beneath it, is to just have a little ostinato pattern. And then you can just, you know, let your left hand or whatever just keep doing that ostinato and play the melody or whatever above it. And that you can just keep it going. There's, of course, the classic ritornello structure, which you'll see in so many chorale preludes from Bach down to the present day, is where you take original melody that you keep returning to between each phrase of the hymn tune. And of course, with that sort of thing, you might want to actually write down your ritornello melody so you can actually remember what you played when you get back to it. But, you know, again, no wrong notes in an improvisation. So if you vary up the ritornello, you can just say, yeah, I totally meant to do that. And you don't have to have a particular theme like that that you always come back to. You can have just looser melodic interlude in between. You can do something like... And instead of doing the same melody, you just have a texture like this kind of very free loop melody is something that's very useful. Mm-hmm. something like that. Or even, you know, you don't have to have a melody. You can just use harmonies. And that's also something that, you know, rather than getting anything too structured, you can create those looser interludes that still have the same character in between each phrase. Of course, there's always imitation with the canon. And for here, you don't necessarily have to make sure that there's no clashes. A little bit of clash can work sometimes, although certainly some hymn tunes work better for that sort of imitation. You might even want to experiment with, do you do it at a measure, or maybe you do it at the half measure. Or other sorts of distances. If you want to get more creative, you can put the imitating voice at a different pitch level, like you play it in down a fifth. And then that's something that can potentially work. Sometimes that it's helpful to have some additional harmony there to just give some context to that kind of canon. Let's go ahead and talk just a little bit about some registration ideas. Of course, with registration, you'll have to deal with whatever instrument you have and experiment with what sounds good. Because as I think most of us know, no two organs are exactly alike. But some potential options, like if you're doing, if you want a solo voice to play some melody or the hymn or whatever, basic is just using a principal eight. You can also sometimes combine a string and a flute to create a similar principal sound, usually a little bit more subdued. You can use just a flute eight by itself. And these tend to be, if you're using a flute, it tends to be more effective in the higher register than if you're trying to solo out the flute in the lower register. It's just a bit of... So you want to kind of keep the flutes high. They like hanging out high. Reed eight are a possibility either... Good. Well, you make sure your reed's in tune, but reed eight are a good solo voice, and you can definitely add body to them by bringing on a flute or a principal, and still gets the character of the reed while it projects a little bit more. And then particularly in the principal, if you're soloing out, you want to look for a nice 4-foot stop, either a principal or you can use a, if you have a good, if you have a nice 4-foot reed that is either on the pedal or you can couple down to the pedal, that's another really good solo tactic. And then you'll want to create an accompaniment registration that will balance with the above. Typically, you'll be looking for any 8-foot combinations of flue pedals, adding additional 4-foot stops if you've got a louder solo voice that you want to balance with. And then in the pedal, the most basic one is just pull on 8 and 16 flute. If you've got a louder one, then switch to principals. That's the most, sort of, if you're not sure what else to pull on, you can pretty much always pull on those and get a decent bass out of your pedal in there. I want to leave a little bit time for questions, but I do want to mention just one little unusual registration thing, which I think is worth exploring, is just using a mixture by itself, which is something that we'll usually never do, because certainly if you're trying to play, well, certainly if you're playing a hymn, you don't want to just use a mixture. And if you're playing repertoire, if you're trying to do polyphony, it's not the best option. But if you're going for atmosphere, mixture by itself. Just using some of these staccato notes. Can be very handy, or even if you want to, I'd use a little bit of an arpeggiated texture. That also creates a really nice little, which is a really neat color there. So I just wanted to mention that. And so, of course, the most important thing with improvisation is just experiment. To a certain extent, you don't know what will work until it works. So keep trying things until it works. And give yourself permission to experiment. Do practice ahead of time. Don't do all your experimentation in the actual service. But definitely spend time practicing, and you'll be amazed, and hopefully your congregation will be amazed at the things that the organ can contribute to the service. Does anyone have any quick questions? Yes. Yeah, that's true. And one other good tactic to that, if you're a little bit nervous about switching from the hymnal, if you have a subcoupler that will couple it down to a 16, or if you have a 16-foot stop, you can still play it at the notated pitch, and it'll immediately take the melody down to the men's octave. Yes. Yes. The strings and celeste combination is probably the most classic communion combination. Yeah, I have that combination set up to a particular piston, because whenever I get to the end of distribution hymn and it's still going on, that's immediately the piston that I hit. Go immediately to the celeste. Perfect atmosphere every time. Any other questions? All right. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for listening in to this recorded session from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music. We hope you'll join us at one of our conferences in the future. Visit lcms.org/worship-institute for more information. lcms.org/worship-institute.